You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, and welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking National League East with MLB.com's five NL East beat reporters. We take a look at the Atlanta Braves. We're looking at some potential trade scenarios, look at a catching situation, and checking out Andrelton Simmons' strong year at the plate. Talk Miami Marlins. We'll be looking at Jose Fernandez and the rest of their rehabbing starters, and also the curious case of Steve Cishek. Talk New York Mets. We'll be looking at David Wright's prognosis, what they do in Wright's continued absence, and a somewhat rough start from Noah Syndergaard. We'll talk Phillies. We'll be talking super prospect J.P. Crawford, no longer a prospect and now a big leaguer Michael Franco, and once many, many years ago prospect Ryan Howard. When we talk Washington Nationals, we'll be taking a look at Steven Strasburg, Doug Fister, Tanner Roark, and Anthony Rendon. Bill, the big news around the Nats, as it has been a lot of the year, honestly, is Steven Strasburg's situation. How long is Strasburg expected to be out?
Well, hopefully it'll be just 15 days. He has the neck problems. Matt Williams called it neck muscle tightness. So hopefully it'll be just maybe a start or two, and he should be back in form, hopefully, and they just take it from there.
How long was this bothering him before he shut it down?
It was the day he got hurt. It was that Friday against Cincinnati. He was fine the first inning, then he started sitting down to rest, and then all of a sudden his neck started hurting him, and he had to be out of the game almost immediately. So it was sad to see Matthew, to tell you the truth, because I think that Strasburg has worked hard this year, and it's too bad he's having all these injuries this year.
So they don't believe this is in any way something that had been going on, any kind of partial explanation for all his struggles this season?
The answer is no. I mean, it's not an arm injury. It's not mechanical or anything. I mean, for a while they thought it was mechanical, but now everyone is saying he's injury-free. I mean, as you know, Matthew, we spoke to Mike Rizzo before he pitched on Friday. He said he's healthy. So we have to go by what they say.
It is kind of strange because it's the second time he's had something of a muscular issue this year. The other one didn't rise to quite this level, but is there any connection at all? Is there any reason to think, even if they're not connected, that the same thing might be causing these things to happen? Because it is weird that you would have two of these things in a relatively short stretch for an athlete who's obviously in peak condition overall.
Correct. I really don't know, Matthew. To tell you the truth, every time we talk to Mike Rizzo, Matt Williams, they say that he's 100% healthy. So I can only go by what they say. When you talk to Strasburg, he says he's healthy. There's nothing wrong with his arm. And it's kind of – he has weird injuries, and apparently he's okay in the grand scheme of things.
Will they do anything different when he comes back? Will there be anything about how he's handled, his between starts routine, anything like that, to sort of increase prevention? Or is it just to figure, hey, things happen, and this guy's going to do what he's always done?
No, nothing will change. Everything's going to be, the regular routine. That's the way it is. As long as he has his mechanics in order, because that was a problem early in the year, as long as he has that in order, he'll be okay.
Is Doug Fister getting closer to a return?
So they say. I mean, he's having bullpen sessions, and he's pitching on the mound. But, he's going to have a rehab assignment before he comes back because he's been out too long. So hopefully he'll be back real soon.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, he's at the point where they probably wouldn't just plug him back in. You're probably talking even once he starts facing hitters another week or two after that, right?
Right, correct. He's going to have to go to a rehab assignment, be there for at least two starts at least, and he should be back in the rotation in no time.
So between him having, at least a couple of rehab starts, is that mean probably Tanner Roark has at least another couple of starts and they kind of figure out the fifth behind him?
Yes, he'll be in the rotation until, we say, further notice, and then once everyone is healthy again, he'll be back in the bullpen. And believe it or not, they miss Tanner Roark in the bullpen right now.
Has anything changed about his situation? Has he established himself any further? I guess it's just not really an option when they got five starters. Is it as black and white as once everybody's healthy, Roark is back in the bullpen?
It is black and white. The thing about him is his attitude. He doesn't mold. He loves what he does. And, he's gone back to the bullpen in several roles. He'll be a long reliever. He'll be short reliever. He could be any of those guys once he comes back.
As effective overall as he has been, it's very strange how few guys he's striking out. I mean, I know he's never been, an overwhelming 200 strikeout kind of guy, but he's not striking anybody out. Is there a cause for that? Is there a reason for that? What's going on with this guy striking out basically three batters per nine innings?
Yes, correct. It's not injuries or anything like that. It's about location. And he's always been a location-type guy, so I don't think the Nationals or anyone else are showing concern. He's arguably, after Scherzer, he's one of their best pitchers this season, so there's nothing to be concerned about there. He's really good hurler.
What do you expect to see from Taylor Jordan this time around in the rotation, even if it's not long, even if it's just one or two starts? What do you expect to see from him?
A guy who throws junk, and, he's going to probably go five innings, give up a couple of runs, and it's about control with this guy. So hopefully, he can help the Nationals win a game here because they need it, and it's a wait and see with him.
How close is Anthony Rendon to being back in Major League games?
You hope with by next week because Escobar has had a great year at third, and that's the way it is right now. He hasn't hit the ball well. I consider that rust, obviously, but Rendon will be okay. He's one of their better hitters that they have on the team.
Will he be handled pretty gently to start? Would it fair to guess he probably wouldn't start five or six or seven games in a row right off the bat, and he might get some maintenance days here and there?
Well, I can see Matt Williams treating him the way he treated Denard Span in particular. I can see him playing three games in a row, getting a day off, then playing again. And, yes, he's going to treat him gently. There's no question about it because he's coming off a serious injury.
It seemed last year like Rendon had finally shed that injury-prone label that had really stuck with him for a long time. Is he with the sort of – again, not just one thing, but a couple things that he's dealt with this year. Is he in a position where the club basically knows going forward they've just kind of got to account for the fact that he may miss some time on a fairly regular basis? And I don't mean just this year. I mean in the long term. Is he a guy that they kind of maybe feel like they have to bake in a certain amount of time this per year because he just had trouble staying healthy?
I don't think so, Matthew. I think this is a one-year thing. Because the previous 2 years, he's been healthy. So I think they're going to, right now, bypass this and then look at him as a guy who's going to be healthy for the rest of the time. But I know when he first started, when he first started with this team, especially after college, he was, he had problems staying healthy. So I think being healthy the last 2 years will give him time to show the Nationals that he's really a healthy guy.
And then one other thing, can you give us an update on Denard Span? What exactly is his health situation right now?
Well, he has a sore knee right now that he hurt in Chicago, and it got worse in Cincinnati. And he should be available today, hopefully. I don't know what the lineup is now, but hopefully he'll be in that lineup today.
You were there when David Wright addressed reporters yesterday, I guess, and the reports were kind of strange, and yours included, and I don't mean the report itself, but the image it was painted was of a pretty emotional Wright speaking fairly optimistically. In total, what did you take from talking to Wright?
It was really bizarre from the way the whole thing was set up and presented to us from the media, as if there was this big news coming, and then David started talking, and you could almost see not tears in his eyes, but it was almost like he was welling up a little bit. And we were waiting for this, other shoe to drop, and it never really did. It was just Wright talking about you know, how optimistic he is, how uncertain he is, yes, but how he's confident that he's going to play. And he kept saying, using the phrase sooner rather than later. He was asked point blank at one point, you know, do you think you're going to play again this season? And he almost laughed it off, like, of course I'm going to play again this season. Like it was the first time he had ever heard a question like that. So it was a really almost surreal the way the interview went. Because, yeah, the way he looked, and you could tell he was just very, you know, Wright, who is always, as long as I've known him, been this picture of coolness, of suave. You know, he's just very good in front of the camera and all that. He wasn't those things yesterday. He was kind of like I've never seen him. Almost like he was nervous to be doing the interview, very uncomfortable, things like that. And yet, like you said, the things that were coming out of his mouth were for the most part, pretty optimistic. So it's just a weird situation. We don't really know what's going on a day-to-day basis because David Wright doesn't know. And they're just taking it week to week, him and his doctors out in California. And, you know, the hope is that one day, or 1 week pretty soon, they'll look up and his doctor will say, okay, you're clear to start doing some baseball activities to start playing. You know, this is an issue, and I think this is sort of going into everything I just said. This is an issue that, if treated the wrong way, can have ramifications on the guy's life beyond baseball. And I think that's the scary part about it. You know, you're talking about a back, you're talking about a spine. These are heavy medical subjects, so I totally get where he's coming from. There's just still a lot of uncertainty with all of this, and I think that's what you saw maybe seeping into David Wright's emotions yesterday.
Just from a sort of baseball or medical perspective, do you feel like you or the club has any more read on the sort of immediate questions of his progress, where he goes now today, than you did 48 hours ago, or was this mostly just kind of Wright checking in, being available, seeing his teammates?
It's a little of both. I mean, it's not like it was a hard news update, so to speak. You know, it's nothing we didn't already know or didn't at least already assume. But basically, he's in limbo. He's going to physical therapy. He's receiving treatment. And you know, he's meeting with one of the best back doctors in the country every Monday. And every Monday, he's given a new assignment for the week, and this is what you're going to do. And right now, that's been mostly the same stuff, the treatment, the physical therapy. And basically, David Wright, like I said, is waiting for one of these Mondays to come in and the doctor to tell him, okay, you're good to go. You can start swinging a bat. You can start throwing. You can start doing all the things you need to do to get back on the field. That could be next Monday. That could be 2 months from now. And it doesn't seem like anybody really has any idea. The only thing is they're just taking this as slow as they possibly can because they don't want to risk anything worse. They certainly don't want him to go down a path where, you know, he might eventually have to have back surgery, because that's something that you're talking about maybe ending his career at that point. And, you know, that's the worst case scenario. That's what they're trying to avoid at all costs. If that means taking this slow for another 2 months, 3 months, whatever it might be, they're going to do it. They hope it's not that long. But, yeah, in terms of an actual update, in terms of an actual day-to-day, there wasn't a lot of it. It's just more of this, you know, knowing what we don't know at this point and trying to figure out a way to, A, get him back on the field, but, B, make sure they're doing it the right way and making sure this isn't going to be an issue that really affects both him as a player going forward, but even more so his quality of life.
In the near term, they have made yet another in a string of adjustments as far as how to handle Wright's absence. The most recent seems to be some increased prominence for Ruben Tejada. I'm guessing that is not a long or even medium-term solution. So where do they stand as far as the talk about maybe Daniel Murphy sliding back over there, as far as Dilson Herrera coming back? With that infield situation, where are they at? Not only right now, but as they look at the next few weeks.
It's a really weird situation because, you know, we were talking about how much we don't know about David Wright, and yet that plays in so much. The Mets are pretty adamant about not moving Daniel Murphy to third base, even though they think that's probably his best defensive position. They're pretty adamant about not doing that unless they think Wright's going to be out for a very long time. At some point, if they think that's what's best for the team, they're going to have to do it. And I think ultimately, when Dilson Herrera gets healthy, and he's started along that process. It should be a couple more weeks for him, but he's definitely making progress. I think at that point, when he comes back, if Wright is still in limbo, you'll see Murphy move to third base. You'll see Dilson Herrera play second base every day. And the Mets also have been pretty adamant about not moving Wilmer Flores from shortstop. So I don't necessarily see that happening. The one thing, and you're right, that Ruben Tejada is not a long-term answer. You know, he's had a nice hot streak at the plate. I don't think anyone really expects that to continue for a long time. But the one thing that could throw a wrench in all this is the Mets look up and they decide to make a trade. There are guys out there who could help this club. And Sandy Alderson was pretty frank yesterday in saying he doesn't want to acquire a third baseman to replace Wright. But if a guy like, and I'm just throwing some names out there, if a guy like a Ben Zobrist or a Martin Prado becomes available, a guy who can play a lot of positions, who could conceivably have a spot on this team after Wright comes back and could play third base every day before he comes back, if a guy like that becomes realistically available for them, then they could certainly spring a deal, and I think it might behoove them to do it sooner rather than later, because the utility of a deal like that is right now, while Wright is out, while Dilson Herrera is out, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of different machinations that are going on here. This could go in any number of ways, but if to answer your question the short way, if David Wright's out for a significant period of time, I think it is inevitable that Daniel Murphy moves to third base at some point.
Is Chris Johnson any kind of fit at all for them? That's a guy the Braves would certainly love to move if they could.
Yeah, and I see what you're saying, but the thing with a guy like that is he's essentially a third baseman, whereas the Mets are looking for someone who could be more versatile. They don't want to acquire a third baseman and then, you know, have David Wright come back and be saddled with that guy and not really have a place to play him. The name that makes a ton of sense to me is Martin Prado. If he becomes available, is a guy who could play third base for you every day, and then once David Wright comes back, he could fill in for Murphy at second. He could fill in the outfield. He could fill in any number of places, really, and you could essentially have a guy who's still playing 5 to 6 times a week for you, giving other guys a break, giving David Wright a break, because I think even in a best-case scenario, you're not going to be able to play David Wright 7 days a week once he comes back. I think they're going to have to be a lot more prudent about it. I don't think they're going to invest prospects. I don't think they're going to invest money in a guy unless they're confident he can be a big part of their team even after Wright comes back. And a guy who essentially only plays third base, I'm not sure, is that guy.
One last thing. What did you see from Noah Syndergaard last night? I mean, as you noted, and he said himself, the stuff was plenty wow. The results were mixed. Was it just as simple as missing location? What did you see from him in that game?
Yeah, I saw a young guy with awesome stuff who couldn't put it where he wanted to. I mean, it's as simple as that. And he's going to have games like that. As long as it doesn't become a trend, I don't think it's anything to worry about. If you've got a starting pitcher who's striking out 10 batters in 4 innings, it's really not a cause for concern. Now, if he goes out and has 3 outings in a row, 4 outings in a row like this, where he's just not putting the ball in particular places that he wants to, then it becomes a worry. Then you have to worry, you know, are his mechanics right? Is he doing the things he needs to do to essentially get big league hitters out at that point? But, he's looked so good in the start before that. I don't think we're anywhere near that point with Noah Syndergaard. And, obviously, as we say every week on this podcast, the stuff is just incredible, which contributes to a lot of that.
Have you ever seen... And I mean this, not, I don't mean sort of hypothetically. I mean, I'm literally asking because I'm not sure I have. You ever seen a starter throw a 97-mile-an-hour sinker before? It's a ridiculous pitch, and I've seen relievers do that. I'm not sure I've ever seen a starter throw that pitch.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you talk about that because, Terry Collins was saying yesterday how as good of a pitch as it is, you know, it's a relatively new pitch for him, and he doesn't want Noah Syndergaard necessarily to fall in love with it because his fourth-seam fastball is so good, because his curveball is so good, and so on and so forth. We've seen some guys with power sinkers before. Mike Pelfrey comes to mind when he first came up, before he lost a lot of his velocity. He was throwing in the mid, sometimes upper 90s with his sinker. I mean, it's if you can locate a pitch like that, it can be absolutely devastating, maybe even more so than a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, just because there can be so much movement on it, relatively speaking, and without the loss of velocity. It's a dangerous pitch for a guy like Noah Syndergaard, who already has two, I would say, plus pitches. And, you know, it's something that if he can continue, this is a very new pitch for him, and if he can continue working on it, I think, you know, it's going to make him that much better.
Mark, the Braves have issued the most walks in the major leagues as a pitching staff. Is that fixable, or is that just kind of what they're going to have to deal with?
You know, I think that a lot of that is a product of a lot of the young relievers. You know, also with Julio Teheran's walk rate being up this year, I think the heart of the question is this bullpen fixable? You're looking at, you know, you've got Jason Grilli in the closer's role where he's shaky every night. Jim Johnson has been good for the most part, other than take away one outing over the last month. Other than that, you're rolling dice pretty much with every other guy you bring out there. And this is something that they expected. They knew when they traded Craig Kimbrel that the immediate impact was that their bullpen was going to be inexperienced. That week or two was, as we expected, was an aberration with some of the young relievers. So they're going to continue to try to mix and match. The Yankees just designated David Carpenter for assignment. Look, when guys become available, there's a reason. You know, this is not like this is the David Carpenter of 2013. But they're going to continue to take chances on these types of guys. That doesn't mean they're definitely going to get David Carpenter. But at the same time, like they did with Nick Bassett, they're going to keep trying to mix and match because they look at it and say, look, they understand. They're not expected to be in the thick of the race, but because they're here, they're not just going to fold their tent without trying to put the pieces together and fix this bullpen.
Yeah, you're a pro. You lead me right into one other thing I wanted to ask. And broadly, this team is three games out. And so broadly, I wonder, could they be buyers? I think that they have shown, this is such an interesting front office, I think they have shown that they are almost certainly not going to be conventional buyers and trade prospects for a short-term fix. I don't think that's the way this team is built. But do you see them between now and the deadline making moves to improve the 2015 team's chances of making the postseason?
I think any move that would improve 2015 would have to be one that would also improve beyond. In other words, they're not going to give up pieces that are going to help them in the future for pieces that are not they're going to also help them beyond this season. They're not going to try to, you know, go all in, say, make the most of what we have. They understand what they have. They also understand, hey, look, if it's a rough June and you know, they struggle up through the middle of July, that they have a lot of pieces that they can move. That they could go either way. Right now, they're happy with where they are. If they end up keeping Johnny Gomes, A.J. Pruszynski, Jason Grilli, and Jim Johnson throughout the rest of this year, fine. But at the same time, when they signed them, they knew what kind of team they might have. They knew there's a chance that they would be out of contention in July, and they can move all these guys. You know, some of them are going to bring better returns than others. Jim Johnson, if he continues to pitch like he has, he could bring a nice return. But there's nothing going to be really significant. But you ask, you know, could they be buyers? I think that if there's a chance where they could move a couple pieces to get somebody that could help them beyond this year, yeah, there's a chance that they could be buyers. And it all depends on what happens here in the next 6-7 weeks.
You mentioned Pierzynski. He got off to that torrid start, but for the last month or so, not only has he cooled off, but actually Bethancourt's out hit him for the last month or so. Are we about to see, or maybe even starting to see, some change in how that playing time at catcher is distributed?
You know, we've got our first indication. We have seen Bethancourt play a little bit more the last couple of weeks, where we've basically seen him catch all Williams, Perez, and Teheran starts. Now we've got him catching a Mike Foltynewicz start here in Arizona, which is basically it's a day game after night game. But yes, I think this is a point where Freddie has to take a step back and remember that AJ is 38 years old. There was a pitch last and during Tuesday night's game there in Arizona where you know, hey, look, the catchers are going to miss pitches, but But you kind of look at it and say, look, it's the same kind of the same stuff that you're complaining about with Bethancourt. At the heart of the matter is this is a chance to figure out what you have in Bethancourt. If you know, he's not learning anything by playing sparingly. I think that they need to get back to at least he's the guy that plays three out of every 5 days, you know, over the next couple months. And that way, you know, heading into the offseason, whether he truly is your guy for the future. You know, A.J. Pierzynski had a great April. May was kind of what we expected out of A.J. So let him get back to that backup mentoring role and find out what you truly have with Bethancourt so that you don't go into next season basically in this same situation.
You mentioned Pierzynski as a potential trade option. Is there any tension at all between not wanting to bury him if he's somebody you'd want to move and also not wanting to bury your catcher of the future? I mean, is that in any way a difficult line to walk, or is it just as simple as tell the manager, hey, do what makes sense here?
You know, I think maybe there is something with that. I mean, that's basically what we've seen with Chris Johnson. You know, we've talked about that where the front office says, hey, look, match him up against the right guys because we want to, you know, improve his numbers and make his month, you know, pretty make his numbers look better than they have been if you're playing him against left-handers on a consistent basis. Yeah, I mean, there could be some of that where you say, hey, look, you keep playing him every day. You know, whatever value we thought we might have had for him on the trade market's going to be gone. He's going to be dead tired by the end of July. You know, 38 years old is 38 years old. There's no hiding that. So, especially a guy who's been in the big league since 1993 and basically 95 on a consistent basis. So, I do think there may be some of that, but I think really more importantly than what the trade value you're getting for Pierzynski, I just think that you have to figure out what you truly know have in Bethancourt. I mean, we keep hearing that they're frustrated with him. You really don't know what you have until you let a guy play consistently, and that doesn't count. And that doesn't amount to 2 weeks of playing time. We're talking you got to let him play for a month straight and then step back and say, who is he?
Also, one other guy I wanted to ask you about. Quietly, I think, you are around you know more than I, and it may not be quiet within the clubhouse. It seems like quietly, Andrelton Simmons is having a really nice year at the plate. Not a star year, but you know, closer to 2012, that brief stint than he has at any time since. Is there anything that he's doing differently? Is it just a matter of kind of development that happens in your mid-20s? What are you seeing from Simmons at the plate?
I think that Kevin Seitzer has really helped him with the up-the-middle approach with and what that has done is helped Andrelton Simmons' balance. We saw a couple weeks ago he fell down on a couple swings, and I asked Freddie about it, and he said that his ankle is a little bit sore. And, you just keep your eyes open, saying, hey, look, first of all, you want to see if the swing's out of whack, and secondly, is the ankle really an issue? Because Andrelton's telling you it is. And it was something that he fixed after a day or two, and we haven't seen that in the past. In other words, well, maybe his mechanics were getting out of whack there. That was the last homestand there at Turner Field there in mid-May. When this occurred, and you know, from there, I see a guy who, look, he may not be, may not have the textbook swing, but we don't have him falling to his knees and being off balance consistently with the swings like we've seen in the past. And I think he's starting to figure out who he is as a hitter, a guy who, if he uses all fields, you know, it gives what takes what the pitcher gives him, and doesn't try to yank everything out of the ballpark. You know, he can be a solid or a consistent offensive player.
You know, you always hope that a guy, when he gets into his later 20s, develops even more. But if this is what he is, if what he is 270, 320, 330 on base, 390, 400 slugging, and the defensive player he is, they'd be absolutely thrilled with that. If he just put those numbers up for the rest of this contract, they'd be thrilled with that, right?
Oh, and no doubt about it. No doubt about it. I mean, it's, you know, before he won a batting title, or even after he won a batting title with the high A level there in the minor league, there was questions about his bat. There's even questions about his bat here. Yes, if anything, any number similar to that, like you said, with that glove, you're thrilled and you try to keep him, you know, forever, however long he wants to stay in Atlanta, he can with that kind of production.
Joe, the reports were that Jose Fernandez absolutely dominated in his first competitive outing. Now, it's worth noting that that's against guys who aren't yet even playing full season ball, guys who will be going to play rookie ball next month. So it's not exactly like he was doing this against the Nationals. That really is my first question, is kind of what's it worth? What does it tell you, what you heard about that first competitive game that he threw?
Yeah, the first impression from Jared Cozart was also doing rehab. He's on the DL. He was there, and he was watching. And his reaction to me was like, wow. I mean, it looked like, you know, he was commanding fastball. I mean, he's overpowering to begin with. But just it looked like a guy just throwing, you know, like he had been throwing all along without coming back from injury. Now, what does this all mean? It's 42 pitches against mainly, 18, 19-year-olds who, as you noted, will be, you know, being dispersed in the near future to higher levels. But very encouraging in the fact that he felt so good, the velocity up to as high as 97. And the next step is now rehab assignment Saturday in Port Charlotte. And from there, he'll progress every several days, whether it's five to begin with or six or five. I think they're figuring stuff out. But, Matthew, I think what I heard is the first outing is going to be two innings. So what that tells me is if he goes just two innings on Saturday, it's almost like the Marlins are treating it as start one of spring training. So, you know, you could do the math of how many starts it will take to be ready. But I kind of look at it as, the Marlins are treating this like this is Jose, June is Jose's, you know, March, which would be spring training, and we'll see how quickly he can get to the big leagues.
And that does kind of set up my next question, which is, do you anticipate that they will take the entire 30 days that they are permitted to take with that rehab assignment?
Yeah, it seems that way, Matthew. It's like there's no real reason not to. I mean, obviously you want to get that guy in your rotation as quickly as possible, but you know, originally the window was June 15th to July 15th, or right at the All-Star break. Now my guess is, you know, there's obviously no way he's going to be here the 15th, and it's looking like they're going to build him up. If he throws two innings on Saturday, then what's he about, 30-something pitches? So then, you know, we're going to have to get him to about 50, and then, you know, 65 or 70, and then, you know, get him up to 90-ish. And that's going to take four or five starts. So my kind of guess is going to be, you know, July 1st to the 7th, anytime in between those days, I would expect to see Jose Fernandez pitching for the Miami Marlins.
What do you think it's fair to expect of him when he comes back, when there's already this sort of excitement, and a guy who is as exciting as he is to watch when he's healthy? You know, the standard is the stuff will be there and the location may linger a little behind that. What do you think it's reasonable to expect of Fernandez once we do see him pitching in big league games?
Matthew, what I think you're going to see this year is, and if you look like his breakdown of pitch selection, just how many, what he threw, like 50, like low 50% fastballs and 25 sliders and like 20-something curveballs and the rest changeups. I think you're going to see a reduction in the amount of sliders this guy throws, because I think the general feeling was, even the way the ligament tear was, it was almost like it peeled off the bone. There's kind of a feeling within the organization as that he threw so many sliders, and it's such a nasty pitch. And if you look at the amount of strikeouts he got on that pitch, so I think you're going to see his kind of, hey, man, you know, we know you're as good as anyone in terms of ball out of hand, electric and power and all that other good stuff, but pitch a little bit. So the expectations are, I think you're going to see, for him, he's a bulldog. You know, he's going to want to go as hard and as fast and as far as he can go right away. But I think they're going to kind of expect him to kind of at least ease into it as much as a Jose Fernandez can. They may have to pull the reins in for him. Well, that means, you know, first start five innings, you know, next start six, and, you know, keep him in that five, six, you know, maybe in August he's throwing seven innings. You know, but that's all going to depend on stressful innings. But like I said, the thing you're going to notice, I will be very curious to watch, is how much he kind of backs off using the slider.
You mentioned Jared Cozart. He is one of three other starters besides Fernandez currently unavailable. How are those guys all coming along? Leitos, Alvarez, Cozart, are they close to being back? Is this team getting anywhere close to having its rotation intact?
Yeah, I think Cozart's going to be the first of those, and Latos will be second, and I'm not sure we're going to see Henderson Alvarez before August, to be honest with you, as he's just kind of building arm strength and trying to get that shoulder healthy. So Cozart is going to be next in line. You know, he's going to be throwing Saturday as well, and it'll be interesting to see if he goes about six innings. Now, the original plan was he was going to go to New Orleans, but now I don't have it completely confirmed, but I think he could be piggybacking with Jose and pitching like six innings. Let's say Jose throws two at Port Charlotte. You might be looking at six from Cozart that day, and then he might be back 5 days in the rotation later. So it's going to be interesting to see how he does in his next rehab start. Like I said, I think it's going to be at Port Charlotte, but that hasn't been 100% confirmed. But either way, whether he's in New Orleans or in A-ball, I think you're going to see Eric Cozart in the rotation late next week.
The big news and fairly striking news this week was that Steve Cishek was sent down. What went into that decision?
Yeah, it's interesting and curious in a lot of ways, Matthew. We all know what the numbers are. We all know he has struggled. We all know he had lost his closer job in mid-May. He had the outing in New York on Sunday, tie game, comes in the seventh inning, gives up the go-ahead run, and obviously takes the loss in that game. Post-game, you know, Dan Jennings spoke more highly of him, more confidently of him. And, Matthew, that day he actually pitched probably better than the results were. The velocity was up to like 93. He threw more. Now, granted, he missed location from time to time, and we know what happens when that happens. But so they sent him down to Double A. They said the reasoning was because Triple A was out west, and they just gave him Double A and just kind of get him going. I think they're going to want to get him multiple innings. But it was kind of curious to me, Matthew, in the fact that the velocity is now up. They say he's really close. Why didn't they do this right after he blew the save back-to-back day, San Fran and L.A. the next day when the velocity was down? There was concerns about, you know, health and obviously mechanics and the pitches were, you know, he wasn't throwing with anything then. Now when he's showing some signs of life, this is the time. But regardless, they feel like they're going to have to get him right. And, you know, a couple of, you know, multi-inning stints, try to get him back a little bit more on top of the ball, maybe close up a little bit to not be, you know, his looks to lefties, they're getting really good views of it. But I think he could be a serviceable guy in the second, you know, or when he comes back in a seventh inning. He doesn't throw, to me, dominant stuff right now to close anymore, but he can definitely help, even if he's, you know, that tough righty on righty and work things out that way in that sixth, seventh inning. And if his stuff gets sharper as the year goes on, then so be it. So it's going to be very curious to see, you know, if he does well and if he kind of figures it out. The other concerns I have just going to Double A is that, you know, Cishek's the guy who lives on corners and umpiring can be big. If, you know, what if some of those pitches in the big leagues are strikes or balls and now he's like in and his numbers don't look good in Double A, you know, what's that going to do to him? But, you know, there's a lot going on with Cishek, and you know, ultimately he's got to figure out and throw quality pitches consistently enough to get guys out, and it's a bottom-line business. But certainly someone to watch this month and over the next week or two to see if he comes back.
What specifically do they want him to show down there? Is there one particular thing? Is it as much as anything just kind of a reset?
Yeah, it's almost like just kind of what I've heard is that they want him to be a little taller instead of I think he's maybe his the extension there is a little longer and he's getting lower. They want him to be a little taller and you know, maybe you know shorten that front stride and be a little bit. Yes, he's sidearm, but still you can be sidearm, but your hand placement gets you on top of the ball and that ball will sink down rather than sweep across, which is what's been happening, and lefties especially get a really good view of it. So, you know, I think there are certain things like that, you know, to me, this move seemed, if this was the direction they're going to, why didn't they do this mid-May? Because he might have been back already and fixed. But just more complicated stuff in the season, that's become very complicated.
Todd, for the most part, we talk major leagues on these podcasts, but J.P. Crawford, who is one of the top prospects in baseball, consensus top 20 or so prospect, was recently promoted from the Florida State League to Double A after just obliterating the Florida State League. And it's worth noting that obliterating the Florida State League is really hard to do. That's a pitcher's league. What is his? I mean, it's never fair to ask timetable, but what's the plan for him? What's the hope and expectation for Crawford's progress from here now that he's at Double A?
Well, I'll be honest. I thought he might actually spend a little bit more time in Clearwater, but you're right. His numbers in Clearwater were ridiculous. So they just promoted him. It wouldn't surprise me if he finished the season in Double A and just kind of played the season out at this point. But I guess you never know. If he goes in there and he just continues to just dominate, maybe they would call, you know, promote him to Triple A later in the season. But I tend to think that because, you know, he's so important to the organization, they really don't want to rush him too much, that he'll just kind of continue to grow in Double A this season, which should be a good challenge for him. You would think so anyway. But based upon the way he has played, he's really kind of accelerated through this organization quicker than most high school players that the Phillies have drafted in recent years. You know, you kind of wonder if, boy, you could actually see him in the big leagues maybe sometime, you know, late next season. It certainly wouldn't shock me if that happened, but of course he's going to need to continue to play well. But everybody in the Phillies organization is really psyched that they have a guy right now in the system that is really making great gains throughout the season.
Yeah, you noted that you know, high school draftee, a young guy. I mean, playing this year at 20. And yet this is a guy who, in the entirety of his minor league career, has almost exactly as many walks as strikeouts. Now, that doesn't necessarily tell you anything, but for a guy at that age and that level of development to have a strike zone like that, I mean, there's a lot to this player, but that's something that really stands out to me. Is that something that they kind of knew, or is that something that surprises them when a kid at that age shows that kind of ability?
Well, they really thought that he was going to be a very good hitter, a big league hitter at some point. I think this might have surprised them a little bit in terms of his ability, like you said, to kind of match the walks with the strikeouts. And I think that really does have them excited because that shows, you know, pitch recognition and patience and ability to work a count and all those types of things. And that's something that, you know, it's been really a grind to find those types of players in the Phillies' system. So to have a guy like that who really seems to make it seem effortless, I think has them going, wow, you know, we really might have a guy here who could be the next superstar. Because as this team begins its rebuilding process for years, really, they've been going, all right, who's the next Chase Utley going to be, the next Ryan Howard, the next Jimmy Rollins? Who's going to be the next Cole Hamels? Well, they finally have a guy there. And they thought Dominic Brown was going to be one of those guys at some point, too. But they really look at J.P. Crawford and they say, this guy could be our next perennial all-star, the next kind of cornerstone piece to maybe what they hope will be, beginning in a couple years, an extended run of success again.
How does the defense grade out on Crawford?
They like him. You know, he was a little bumpy early on. I was talking to Joe Jordan, their farm director. The first week he was a little bumpy in terms of, I think he had committed a few errors in his first week in Clearwater. But they seem to think he's a big league shortstop. This isn't a thing that they're playing here right now. But you know, you don't hear any whispers of, you know, when he gets to the big leagues, you know, he could maybe move over to second base, or you know, if it doesn't work out, he's probably more of a center fielder. You know, they had Roman Quinn right now, who came up as a shortstop, and they moved him to the outfield specifically because they think J.P. Crawford can be a big league shortstop. So they seem high on his they're high on his bat, and I think they're high on his glove as well.
The guy that they hope is going to stand to his right for many years, Michael Franco, had found himself in a 2-for-27. And it appears to have broken out of it. Was that something that just happens because sometimes baseball players go 2-for-27, or was there something where maybe big league pitchers found a flaw or a hole or something in him?
Yeah, I think it was just one of those things where, you know, the pitchers are making adjustments. They're seeing him a little bit more, and he's got to make adjustments back. But everybody I've talked to does not seem concerned about his ability to kind of get things straightened out at some point. He's still a really young player, for a big leaguer, getting some everyday playing time. So he's got a lot to learn yet, but they feel that he can handle it and he's going to be able to make these adjustments. So, yeah, he wasn't a slump. He had that big home run, game-tying home run Tuesday night against the Reds, and they're hoping that that's just kind of a glimpse of it. And really, boy, the way he's played defense, he Crawford and Franco on that side of the infield is really kind of intriguing for Phillies fans, I think.
And you took away my next question, which is, you had mentioned there was a lot of excitement about Franco's defense. Upon getting to the big leagues, has he been the third baseman that people thought he was going to be?
Yeah, I think so. Now, he has made a few errors, and that's kind of there's a couple reasons for that. I think, one is just, the games, guys are squaring up the ball a little bit more, but he's had a couple throwing errors. And what has been kind of the thing with Franco is he's got such a great arm, he's got such natural instincts and such natural ability that sometimes he might get a little bit lazy or lackadaisical on his throws over to first. And they also noticed, I think it was a couple weeks ago in Colorado, he was maybe playing a little bit a step or two too deep. And as a result, all of a sudden he gets the ball and he finds, oh, I got to kind of rush my throw a little bit. And he'd kind of let a couple balls sail. So they thought they've seen some improvement there just in terms of his defensive positioning, giving him more time to throw so he doesn't feel rushed. But I think with him, like I said, he's so naturally talented that sometimes he gets a little lackadaisical because he's like, hey, backhand it, pick it, throw it, not a big deal. And then sometimes he finds himself going, uh-oh, I'm in a little bit of trouble here. I got to hurry this throw up. But I think over time you're going to see him be a pretty solid defensive third baseman.
To continue moving around the infield, I obviously still hear a lot of what's said about the Cardinals, and when Matt Adams went down, a lot of talk about what they were going to do at first base. Now, odds are they will find an internal option, but one of the names that started kind of bouncing around was, what about Ryan Howard, who has always hit at Busch Stadium like it's Coors Field. Is there any legs at all to that? Do you get any impression that the Cardinals might have even put in a call on Howard, or do you think that's a non-starter?
I don't think it's a non-starter, but I don't get a sense in talking to people that there's anything really cooking there. Now, it would not surprise me if Ruben called up the Cardinals almost immediately after that injury and said, hey, what do you think? But I think the feeling I get is there are people out there that still want to see more from Ryan Howard before they commit to him, the interesting part, Matthew, which we've talked about a lot, is the Phillies are more than happy. I shouldn't say happy, but they're more than willing to eat a vast majority of that contract. So, you'd think you'd be able to get a few nibbles here and there, especially if the Phillies are willing to eat most of the remaining part of that deal. But so far, it sounds like there really is not too many people calling up the Phillies saying, "Hey, let's talk prospects." So. And I wonder, again, if it's people want to see a little bit more from him, especially because, Howard over the last week, he really has cooled off. He had a phenomenal month there, and then the last week or so, he's really cooled off. So you wonder if some people are kind of skeptical that he'll be able to keep it up offensively.
One thing that stands out to me, and he was never one of those 100-walk guys, but he's not walking at all. And that actually, he was a 100-walk guy, my mistake, as I call the numbers up. That really stands out to me for one reason in particular, which is a lot of times older players tend to get more patient. They say, well, if I'm not going to get around on stuff, I'll make sure I get my exact pitch. And a lot of times you'll see older power hitters walk more. He is walking less than ever. What's going on with that?
My theory on that is this, and I wrote about this a little bit in April, and pitchers really are attacking him more with fastballs now and with fastballs more in the strike zone. And I think it goes back to they've seen his production kind of decrease over the years, and they don't really look at him as this you know, 45 home run, middle of the order, bona fide threat that he had been in the past. So I think they're maybe being a little bit more aggressive to him, and they're just attacking him more, and he's taking cuts. He's either putting the ball in play or he's just striking out. So, you know, it seems like he's a lot more aggressive and pitchers are a lot more aggressive with him. And so there's less ability to kind of work that count and wait for that perfect pitch, because they're giving it to him early and saying, hey, all right, let's see if he can hit it. And you know, he was doing that for about a month, but you know, first month of the season and the last week or so, he has not.
MLB.com Extras. Thanks for listening.